throwing up a shower of sparks. The blade bit deep into the metal, cleaving it, and sticking fast.
Fuck!
The man tried to free the machete, jerking up on the handle so hard that he lifted the heater from the concrete. Doc lunged up from his knees and thrust, spearing the sword through his adversary's torso.
Oh. Oh, my banana. From the knave to the chops.
Doc whipped the blade free. Clutching his mortal wound, the man staggered forward and fell face first over the water heater. Jack sensed his opponent was tiring of the game. It was clear that Jack was too quick for him. Even with his back to the SUV, the albino ducked and dodged every attack the man tried. After a few minutes of fruitless all-out effort, the idea that a counterattack was coming, and one that he probably couldn't defend against, filled the man's mind and face with dread. A moment before he made his move, a light came on in his eyes. Jack read his thoughts. The triple stoop had finally realized the obvious. If you can't shoot, nothing's stopping me. The man hurled the pipe at Jack's head and turned to run. Jack ducked, and the pipe hit the roof and flipped away. By the time he had straightened, the man was at the cinder block wall and starting to climb. Jack stepped forward, gripping the barrel with both hands. He coiled, pivoting from his hips, and winged the shotgun at the man's back. The blaster flew through the air sideways, end over end. It caught the man at the base of the neck, just as he reached up to grab the top of the wall and pull himself out. 7 pounds of steel pounded his face into the cinder block. His forehead bounced off the wall, his knees buckled, and he fell to the ground. Jack straddled him from behind, taking hold of his shoulder in one hand and his chin in the other. He gave the chin a sudden twist, and the spinal column parted. Doc appeared from over the wall.
Nicely turned, my dear Jack. I do believe we are finished here.
Jack let the man fall back to the dirt, brushed off his hands, then climbed out of the basement.
Thanks, old man.
They moved with much more care through the ruined neighborhood to the edge of the city center, keeping a close watch for movement in the runoff ditches. There were no more stragglers. The one stories that ringed the park looked deserted. Crossing over to the square's line of trees, they peered up at the facade of City Hall. There was no sign of life there, either.
If Mildred and Christie are inside, they may well be under guard.
Fix that.
Jack unholstered his Colt Python. Doc pulled out his Lamar.
I concur, my boy. In the end, subtlety will only take us so far.
Side by side, they rushed across the street and up the City Hall steps. Randy looked out from beside one of the tall windows.
I can't see anything from here. They're probably almost to the dam by now.
Oh, I wish you'd shut up. I'm tired of listening to your whining.
Valerie Louise wasn't the only one. Christy and Mildred, bound hand and foot to their chairs, had been a captive audience to the woman's complaining for what seemed like hours. Neither of the Pilgrim wives was pleased at being assigned guard duty, and thereby missing the show at the dam, but Randy was by far the most vocal. A stuck record.
We could see the ceremony from the window at the end of the hall.
It's too far away. We wouldn't be able to see anything.
Sure we would. Maybe not the offering, but the procession across the dam. That's the second best part.
We're not supposed to leave them alone.
Who'd know? Look at them. They aren't going anywhere. It'd only take a minute. You know you want to see. There might not be another offering for months.
Valerie Louise glared at the prisoners with her right hand firmly resting on the butt of her holstered Colt Army 44. Christy gave her a blank, unchallenging look in return. But her stomach was churning. The women of Little Pueblo didn't just wish others misery, they wanted to cheer while watching it come to pass. Perhaps these two had good sides. Perhaps the other women did too. Perhaps they were kind to their children, to each other, to the chickens. But to Christy, all that had long since stopped mattering. Given the chance to free herself and her companions, she would have gladly killed the lot of them. Twice. Valerie Louise clawed at her dense mat of shoulder-length hair as she considered her options, the pros and cons. And after a few moments, She decided the pros had it.
You two better not try anything. If you do, we'll make you damn sorry.
This is our chance. You've got to go for it now.
Christy didn't need prompting. Clearly, there was no other choice. If they were to free themselves, she had to call upon Gaia, the invisible feminine power of the Earth, using the technique she had learned from Mother Sonia. She closed her eyes and began to breathe slowly and deeply in and out, focusing her mind on the great mystery that united all things, the warp and weave of existence. As the connection was made and the Gaia energy started to build, she felt it as a weight pressing down upon her entire body, crushing her into the chair. When the pressure became unbearable, she stopped resisting and yielded utterly to it, and in so doing, felt it suddenly lift from her, leaving her weightless, floating. Up through the soles of feet, up her legs, into her hips, a current of energy crackled, building to a towering peak.
Give me all the power. Let me strive for life.
Her face twisted in concentration. Christy twitched her wrists on the chair arms, the slightest of movements. They had to be precise, or the sudden application of Gaia Force would have shattered both her arms. The thick ropes broke apart like they were made of silk thread. The exertion had a price, and Christy paid it. The terrible backwash made her black out for a split second. She awoke to the sound of Mildred's voice.
Untie your ankles. Hurry. We don't have much time.
Yeah. Right, Mildred.
Though dizzy and lightheaded, Christy managed to free her legs. She moved shakily to Mildred's side and started working on her bonds. From the hall outside, they could hear the two women arguing as they returned.
That was the dumbest idea, Randy. We didn't see shit.
You should have left earlier, that's all.
Mildred shook the ropes loose from her ankles.
They're coming back already. Stand over there, out of the way.
Christy obeyed, still too weak to be of any real help. Mildred picked up her chair by its back and moved alongside the entry door. As the knob turned, she reared back with the chair.
I'm telling you, if I ever listen...
Mildred caught her above the brow with the edge of the chair seat. Valerie Louise's shocked expression turned into a grimace as she jolted backward, slammed into the doorframe, and went down. Mildred hit her again in the head, swinging the chair so hard she broke off two of its legs when they struck the jamb. In the doorway, Randy froze, her eyes wide. Even though she was armed with a cap-and-ball revolver like her sister wife, she didn't reach for it. Instead, she did what came naturally. She turned and ran.
Oh, no, you don't.
Mildred ran after her. As she ducked out the door, the doctor threw the chair at Randy's pumping legs, sweeping the knot from under her, sending the woman crashing to her face. In three strides, Mildred had hold of the chair again and was beating Randy into the hallway floor with it. The chair came apart, leaving her with just the back. Mildred tossed it aside and dragged the unconscious woman into the room by her heels. Mildred dumped Randy beside Valerie Louise. Then she and Christy stripped the bodies of their weapons. Mildred hefted the Colt Army 44.
We need more firepower than this. We've got to find our weapons.
She took the torch from its wall stanchion.
Can you walk, Christy?
Christy could walk, but just barely, leaning on Mildred's shoulder. The two of them started searching the adjoining rooms. They didn't have to go far. Through the next door, beside one of the platform beds, they found all their gear, apparently intact. Mildred picked up her ZKR 551 and passed Christy her Smith & Wesson Model 640. They opened the cylinders and made sure the blasters were still loaded. With her favorite blaster in hand, Christy started to feel somewhat better, if not fully recovered. She sat on the edge of the bed while Mildred began sorting out the packs, collecting ammo.
What was that?
Mildred and Christy turned and brought up their blasters. The door burst open. They suddenly found themselves staring into the business end of a hand blaster with two barrels, one over the other, the lower one as big as a cannon. A Civil War relic. Doc quickly lowered his Lamar.
By the three Kennedys, we've found you!
Jack followed him into the room, his Colt Python in hand.
Are you two all right? Have you been harmed in any way? The two ladies next door seem rather the worse for wear.
We're both fine, but Ryan and JB are in serious trouble.
We saw them taken away by the Vill folk.
Where'd they go?
They were put in the dam, locked in.
To what end were they put there? Is it a prison? The people seem to be celebrating the event.
More like a death house, Doc. We don't understand what's involved, but it's for sure they're in great danger.
Get them out now.
Before we try to rescue them, Jack, we have to make sure we have a way out of here. Chances are, when our exit comes, it's going to be rushed.
You foresee a retreat under fire.
I think that's likely, you old coot.
We're going back to Minotaur, then.
That's our first destination. We've got to get in there. It's our best escape route. If the MAT-TRANS isn't operational, we're going to have to go to Plan B and pull together some supplies for the walkout.
That shouldn't be a problem. The buildings outside are deserted. We can take whatever we need.
We've got to get into the redoubt while the Vilfolk are still busy at the dam.
No time to tarry, then.
They divided up the extra weapons and gear. Christy couldn't carry her full share because her knees were still too wobbly. She took Ryan's sniper rifle and an ammo satchel. In addition to his own gear, Jack slung JB's 12-gauge pump. The four of them slipped out of City Hall without seeing another soul. No one was moving on the sidewalk that bordered the park or along the visible storefronts, so they crossed the cracked street to the square, slipping into the line of trees. They followed the cover of the trees until they were directly across from the front of the redoubt. Light of day revealed the aftermath of the battle that had taken place the night before, scorch marks left by the Gren detonations. Shallow craters blasted into the sward, burned and blackened trees, bark and limbs savagely blown off.
It looks like we won't have to move a ton of rocks this morning.
The area in front of the redoubt entrance was still littered with the boulders Ryan and JB had carried. With Jack in the lead, they ran single file across the grass. When they reached the steps, Mildred, Christy, and Doc descended, while Jack stood at the top, keeping watch. The last rock was right where JB had left it, still blocking the door. Mildred and Doc took hold of either end, lifted it, and swung it out of the way onto the steps.
Well done, m'lady.
Shove it, Doc.
As they did this, Christy moved to the keypad lock beside the door.
God damn it!
At the head of the steps, Jack dove to his left as slugs pelted the earth and whined up the tops of the boulders. Jack came up on one knee with his python blazing. Mildred, Doc, and Christy cut loose with a withering volley of fire, aiming at the edge of the roof as they backed up the stairs.
The cat's most definitely out of the bag.
No! Please!
Earlier, the blinded man had clung to the edge of the hole. His body from the armpits down was already inside. His feet were on the third set of rungs. He hung on to his last hope with every ounce of his strength.
Please, just shoot me!
He wasn't begging just the robed and bearded pilgrims who stood over him. He was pleading to every person on the dam, everyone he had ever befriended, everyone he had ever toiled beside, for an act of human kindness and mercy. He was asking the wrong favor, in the wrong place, of the wrong folks. Pilgrim Plavik put the sole of his boot on top of the man's head and pressed down with all his weight, forcing him all the way into the hole.
Close it.
The pilgrim, standing by with pry bars, nodded grimly. Plavik kept his foot on the man's head until the very last second, pulling it away as the pilgrims dragged the heavy steel plate shut.
Praise Bob! Praise Enid! The offering is made! Let us show our joy and do them honor!
At his words, the Vilfolk formed two lines facing each other across the dam-pressed road. Plavik walked to one end of the gauntlet, clapping his hands as he did so. The people picked up the infectious beat, and by the time he turned, they were all clapping with him. Because he was head pilgrim, it was his duty and his right to show first joy. Plavik began to dance. He capered between the ragged rows of people, moving from one side of the road to the other, spinning around and around with his arms in the air, shaking his shoulders, extending his tongue, rolling his eyes, waggling his head.
Glory to Bob and Enid!
All praise to Bob and Enid!
He worked the crowd to a fever pitch as he progressed toward the manhole. By the time he got there, they were all yelling, all swaying and bobbing, and eagerly dancing in place. It wasn't until he actually set foot on the manhole that he let loose with his best steps, a modified buck and wing with frantic shoulder shimmies and eye rolling. Every person on the dam, starting with the pilgrims, then the wives, then the children, then the field slaves, took turns dancing down the cheering gauntlet to the manhole cover, and there performed their most sprightly and energetic jig, dancing on someone else's grave. Plavik melded into the slowly moving chorus line, keeping time with his hands.
Dance, people! Dance to the glory of Bob and Enid!
The ceremony was all about stalling the inevitable, watching someone else be taken instead of you, knowing you dodged the bullet this time. Staying alive in the short term was all that was possible. A philosophy subscribed to by pilgrims and wives, and by the field hands. A philosophy created out of whole cloth by Bob and Enid, so that the Vill might survive. The demons would surely be pleased this day. It had been a very fruitful week when it came to offerings, and to wives. Plavik scanned the line on the other side of the road, picking out Wicklaw's former mistresses and making sexy eyes at them. The new widows gave him shy but sexy eyes right back, whispered something to one another,